Welcome to Diplomatic Dispatch, a podcast by Radio Canada International on rcinet.ca.
We did not take action to start a war. I have a simple message for you. On behalf of 35 million Canadians, we're back.
Hello, I'm Levon Savouns. Diplomatic Dispatch is a new podcast series by Radio Canada International. My goal is to bring you insights into Canada's foreign, defense, and development policy. I'll discuss Canada's global role through interviews with policymakers, former and serving diplomats and soldiers, academics and think tank experts, humanitarian workers, civil society activists, and entrepreneurs. This is Episode 1, Rethinking Canada's Foreign Policy. What is Canada's foreign policy? How should Canada conduct its foreign policy? Who should conduct that policy? Should that policy change? And if yes, how? Who are Canada's allies and who are its foes? And what do we do with them? These are all questions that I'm hoping to ask and try to answer in this podcast series. And my search for the answers began in Ottawa at the Summit on Canada's Global Leadership in late November of 2019.
Yes, so hi, my name is Nicholas Moyer. I'm the CEO of the Canadian Council for International Cooperation. It's the association that represents the 2,000 organizations in Canada that work in international development work or humanitarian relief. And it's a real privilege to have this job. I've had it for a year and a half and really get to speak about issues that matter a lot to me.
Now, you are, I'm guessing, one of the principal organizers of this, if not the principal organizer of this conference.
Certainly I've had a hand in it, yes.
So there has been a lot of talk recently. It's almost like it's in the general zeitgeist of Canada talking about foreign policy. What was your reason for organizing this conference?
Well, I have a few reasons why in particular. One, I think that just the world is changing so fast, and even though Canada has achieved a lot in the past, we're not fully fit for purpose for the future as we would like to see it for Canada. And in this bucket, I'll put many elements around how the foreign context has changed, the rules-based order being under pressure, our inability now as a country to rely on fully on the support of our southern neighbor around certain things, the vulnerability we feel in Canada with China and U.S. relations. But the fact is that I also come at this from an international development and humanitarian response perspective. And in our field, we've known Canada's been underperforming for decades. In fact, Canada's contributions to ODA, so official development assistance, as a percentage of our GNI, has not been lower in 50 years. Like, this is the lowest point in 50 years. And we've been saying this for a long time, and what we've discovered in the last year is that our sense of underperformance on the global stage is actually shared by those who work in trade or who work in diplomacy or who work in security. And so that's why this summit made a lot of sense, because we also, one, share this sense that we need to do more, but don't have the spaces to talk to each other. And so the trade communities come together, the NGO and aid communities come together, but all separately. And so we needed a space to talk to each other and champion a greater ambition for Canada's role in the world.
So what do you hope to achieve with this?
I hope that we can actually start to build the bridges that are needed between all the subsectors of Canadian foreign policy to champion significant change with our government. I hope that we can lay the foundations for discussions around what a truly ambitious and coherent and well-funded foreign policy could look like that might survive the test of time and partisan wins through elections, because foreign policy requires time to have an impact, and we don't have that in our electoral cycles. So what we need is to develop the non-state sort of alignment of interests so we can inform government to make the right choices. And so we're starting that process here, and I think we're seeing that it's coming together with a lot of other efforts that are happening across the country sort of a chorus of rising voices around a need for a policy review.
Where do you see the greatest need for change in Canadian foreign policy?
Well, you know, one of the things I think is probably the most challenging is that Canada's history has been one of being at every table. And I think that what we probably need to do to have a real impact in the long term is to choose which tables we'll be at. And that's difficult. So I'll recognize that's an important piece of the conversation we're having here. Certainly for the international development and humanitarian community, we want Canada to keep championing human rights, and women's rights and gender equality, and we want us to be able to fund that to the tune that we're supposed to, which is a long-standing commitment of 0.7% of GDP.
Hmm. Now, of course, the only time foreign policy in any way came up in this election was when Conservative Party leader Andrew Scheer promised to cut Canada's foreign aid by at least 25%. Mm-hmm. What does this tell you about where the discussion about Canada's foreign development aid, foreign assistance aid, is in Canada?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think for one, I think Canadians dramatically overestimate how much we give. You know, we've done a lot of polling ourselves. We know that over 80% of Canadians support international assistance. We also know that they, on average, overestimate our contributions by an order of 10. And so there, we really actually have a disconnect between sort of the public perception of what Canada does and the reality. And so that's, I think, an important piece to this. But you raise the fact that, you know, this was mentioned during an election, and our sector is not used to being sort of to come out as an issue during an election. But there's something profound about the fact that a man who is going to be potentially our next prime minister saying that Canada should withdraw from the world, because that's essentially the message. Cutting aid by, you said a quarter, but it was actually a third based on the numbers they put forward to the Parliamentary Budget Office. Really is sort of Canada turning in on ourselves. And we created a false dichotomy, which was us versus them, in the language that followed that announcement. And it's such a false choice. Canada does well when the world does well. And we've had a long history of supporting countries with whom we've then developed very strong relationships. I think of South Korea after the Korean War, major recipient of aid, now with the 11th largest economy in the world, and we've signed a free trade agreement with them. You can say the same for Vietnam. You can say the same for Europe after the Marshall Plan. You can look at Rwanda after the genocide and the example they've become within their region as a stabilizing force. There's still much to do there, but regardless. And so there's really a very strong case for the place of aid in serving actually Canada's national interest on a trade side, on a security side, because climate change is leading to forced migration around the world, and those are coming to our shores. And then finally, even with respect to our, you know, immigration and even our health, global pandemics know no boundaries.
You're listening to Diplomatic Dispatch, a podcast by Radio Canada International. Check out our other podcasts on rcinet.ca. You can also download them on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
There seems to be kind of a contradiction in the way the Liberal government had put out its message, Canada is back, mm-hmm. and what it actually did. You mentioned the ODA. If I'm not mistaken, the Liberals on per capita basis actually spent less on ODA than the previous Conservative government. Our only peacekeeping mission was a slightly longer than a year, 250-280 people. And this is after we proclaimed that Canada is back and we're campaigning for a UN security seat. How do you, I guess, resolve this contradiction between what we're telling others about ourselves, what we think about ourselves, and what we're actually doing on the world stage?
Canadians have every reason to be proud as a country. We have an amazing country. But sometimes we talk a little bit too loudly about how great we are. And on the international stage, you know, we have to walk the talk. And that's how we can really have an impact. And we're at risk when we signal too strong our intent but don't follow through, of disappointing our partners in potentially serious ways. And I think there's a real, you know, the first mandate of the Trudeau government did actually do some very important things with respect to setting ambitions. You know, they certainly committed to re-engaging through multilateral fora. They decided to explore a peacekeeping mission, however brief it may have been, in Mali. They launched a new feminist international assistance policy, and that's something our sector was calling for. They also did a whole defense policy review and committed to expanding spending there. But ultimately, there haven't been the progress in terms of the commitments of funding that are needed to deliver on these things. And so it's certainly what we're looking for in a next government. And we just have to be more honest about the conversations we have about foreign policy, that they shouldn't necessarily be about domestic politics, how great we are, but actually about what the world needs and where we can make a difference, because that's where we will gain credibility with our peers internationally.
You mentioned something about Canada maybe getting used to that it's not going to sit at all the tables or have a... Do you have any specific examples where you think Canada could pull back and other examples where it could actually focus its resources more?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think one of the places to start when making this choice is to look at what our comparative advantages are as a country. Where does it make sense that we show leadership? And, you know, one of those is within the Sustainable Development Goals, everything related to environment and climate change. We've got such a large country, we contribute, we have such a large coastline, our performance there matters a lot. And we can have a big impact around the world by showing leadership. Immigration and human rights are other places where we are known to have strong systems. These can be contributed within the world. We can show leadership in these tables. There will be difficult choices, but we can be punctual about where we engage. We don't have to be at every table all the time. So there's not a simple solution to this. I think we have to start from what our comparative advantages are, where we've made a difference. I actually have an interesting list of potentially we could draw on. And we have credibility in certain places. We should be looking for maximum impact without having to require maximum investment. Because we are a mid-sized power at best. A good example might be sort of nuclear proliferation. Canada is a nuclear-capable country that has chosen not to have nuclear weapons. We have the highest level of sophistication in nuclear technology. We're credible among nuclear nations. We can play a brokering role around what seems to be a very unstable period around nuclear proliferation. But I think we need to always ground these choices that we make in our own strategic comparative advantage.
If there was one thing that you wanted people who participate in this conference take away from it, what that would be? What's the single most important thing in your mind that needs a lesson that needs to be learned by all the participants across all the different sectors that are present here?
The one thing, really, for me, is that we have to recognize it's not about our subsectors, it's all together. That there's massive overlap in our interests when we talk about preserving democracy from a security lens or from a development lens, when we talk about prosperity or equality from a trade lens or a development lens. We're actually all trying to achieve the same thing, an inclusive and prosperous world within which Canada can thrive. And that's the part that is really fundamental to me, the relationships, the breaking down of silos, and the creating of a bigger community around our foreign policy.
How about questions? There's a lot of sometimes vigorous, sometimes very superficial debate around foreign policy issues. What do you think are the questions that are not being asked and you would like to be asked as part of this debate?
To me, a lot of the questions are around, so there's policy coherence is one. Are we actually pushing, are we all rowing in the same direction through our different levers of foreign policy? So when we're looking at trade or we're looking at development or security, are we rowing in the same direction? Is our policy actually coherent? In some cases it is, in some cases it's not, and we should ask the hard questions about that. I would like for us to actually ask a bigger question. Are we committed to engaging in the world? Canadians say they are, but if we are, we have to put our money where our mouth is. And I'm not sure if it's a foreign policy review, but we need to be looking more coherently at our engagement, and I'd like to see us set a target. You know, we might spend, for example, 2% of GDP on foreign policy, and then figure out how we divide that between all the different subsectors, from defense to aid to diplomacy to trade. But we need to fund our intentions clearly. We need to find a place of consensus between the different parties that can survive electoral cycles. I think it's possible, but that's what we're trying to find out here at the summit.
Now, a lot has been said about the fact that we are in a minority government right now. Some people say, actually quite counterintuitively, a minority government presents an opportunity to develop a policy that enjoys the support of a larger sector of the parliament. So maybe, if not unanimous, but at least, a much broader support than just, you know, one party. Do you see this as a possibility?
I do on certain things. I think we can see it potentially on pharmacare domestically. I think that it was fascinating for us to see the outcome of the election. At the Canadian Council for International Cooperation, obviously we care about our international development commitments. And we asked all the parties what they thought about this. And interestingly, the Liberals committed to increasing spending, but then the NDP, the Bloc, and the Green all committed to 0.7% of GDP, this long-standing Lester B. Pearson target. So we have a constellation of actors that could actually potentially vote for increases to our official development assistance budget. And it's noteworthy that the last time there was an uptick in the percentage of ODA to GNI was under a Paul Martin government, where Jack Layton's NDP had this as a request. And so there is reason to believe that the alignment can be there. But we have to be realistic also about the competing interests in a minority government and where that leadership will lie. Will foreign policy ever sort of come to the fore ahead of domestic interests? Maybe, maybe not. But it is through events like this one that we can raise that profile. And if we can show to government that there's an appetite outside of government for us to do better, there's actually, in a minority context, a chance that we might actually get attention.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
That was Nicholas Moyer. He is the president and CEO of the Canadian Council for International Cooperation. You've been listening to the first episode of Diplomatic Dispatch. Tomorrow, I'll be speaking with Richard Fadden. He is the former National Security Advisor to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. And if you have any comments, you can send them by email. Our email address is english@rcinet.ca. I'm Levon Sivuns. See you tomorrow.